Good morning. So the title of my talk today is Turtle Power and Serpent Power, Taking the Exquisite Risk. So those of you who've been around for a while and heard me talk know that I talk a lot about turtles. And I have turtles on my altar, and I said a couple of years ago, no more gifts of turtles. So I'm reiterating that. No more gifts of turtles. There's not room on my altar for turtles. So one thing I don't talk about is too much, haven't talked about too much, is the turtle shell. The turtle has a shell to protect it from a difficult world out there. Scary things happen to us. Bad people do bad things to us. We go into the shell to protect ourselves. And that's where we have our ego-related thoughts and behaviors. And they help us. They help us. But also the time comes when the turtle just takes a step. Just is ready to take a step. And if we don't, it creates pressure on the shell. We feel squeezed, more and more squeezed, living in too small a space. For a big heart mind, for a spacious heart mind. So we need to take a chance and open and move beyond. So, this is still, I see this is on my back. Let's see, maybe we could. I think if we do this, it's better. Okay. No, let's put it over here. Let's put it over here. Okay. Now let's.
It actually should be flipped around, because otherwise the speaker's not going to go on.
Okay. Okay, thank you. I just stayed in my shell pretty well for that, didn't I? But we can't spend our whole lives in our shell. We can't spend our whole lives in a shell. And turtle is also has been a personal power animal for me, because in the late 80s I spent about 5 years doing shamanic work and in my imagination or in my archetypal world, turtle came and supported me. So turtle is just reminding us that we can take a step at any time, that we're caught in the shell of limiting beliefs, habitual behaviors, and they keep us tight and small and scared. The second power animal that I'm talking about today is the Naga. This is actually the main Buddhist power animal. In Mahayana Buddhism, the main power animal, Mahayana. The Naga, N-A-G-A. And I've talked about the Naga before, too. You guys, most of you have heard me talk about the Naga. The Naga infuses Mahayana Buddhism. Buddha supposedly was protected by the Naga when he was being besieged with all these yucky thoughts and all these seductresses who were trying to get him to get off the cushion and go to town and just have a life. So the Naga, cobra. If you can see Buddha statues where the cobra, head of the cobra, is protecting Buddha, right? And supposedly the Prajnaparamita Sutras, which are the original Mahayana Sutras, were protected by the Nagas in the cave for 400 years till people were ready for them. Nobody could get into the cave to get them because the Nagas were protecting. And then we have Nagarjuna and the Tetralemma that I've talked a lot about, the famous Buddhist philosopher. So, skin or shell? More exposed. When we're more exposed, We're more porous. We're more sensitive. We have more contact with just this. We're more permeable. So shedding skins, coming out of the shell, similar metaphor. And Mark Nepo, or Nepo, talks about taking the exquisite risk to take a step out of the shell. The exquisite risk to shed this hard skin that kind of keeps us separate and alien and feeling not okay. Every time we shed a skin, we touch aliveness more fully. Our own aliveness, the aliveness of everything. But when we shed a skin, we're exposing ourselves to danger and loss. That old experience gave us comfort, it gave us security, gave us certainty, and we're exchanging it for what's unfamiliar and more alive. Path of exquisite risk. Somebody asked me I give this talk at 9, you know, also. Somebody asked me at 9:40 or whatever it was, 9:50. Why exquisite? What's exquisite about it? Well, if we really engage, we feel connected, even if it's been painful. And that's exquisite about that, about doing that full engagement beyond our usually limited ideas of who we are. It's exquisite. So all we have to do is be here and take one step. Nietzsche says, the snake which cannot cast its skin has to die. So we kind of shrivel up and die inside when we just hide behind our skins or within our shells. And we live kind of a dead life. But we can always take another step. And indigenous people, many, many indigenous people, talked about humans originally having the power to rejuvenate and live fully by shedding their skins. The Navajo talks about Navajo spirituality. They talk about skinwalking, shape-shifting as skinwalking, transforming into the bodies of bears, wolves, eagles for the purpose of healing and protecting their communities. Kinship. So years ago when I was lived in the Zen monastery in California, and my teacher Suzuki Roshi used to speak every night, and we had, I don't know if we had electricity, we didn't seem like we had electricity. He would sleep before speak, there'd be a lantern that we'd light, so you could just sort of see his face flickering in and out, you know, we'd see his face flickering in and out. And one morning we started talking after his talk, one of the talks, and we said, was that a male or a female speaking? Was it a he or a she? And we couldn't tell. Sometimes it seemed to be a she. Sometimes it seemed to be a he. And it was wonderful. It was alive. It was not caught by some sense some rigid sense. Just more open. More spacious. And we have a new Buddha in there, behind Mark and Wayne, a Kuan Yin Buddha on that altar there. And is that a female or a male? Kuan Yin, as Kuan Yin, is a female. But as Avalokiteshvara, she's a male, he's a male. Which is it? The more we learn to shed skins, the more we're not caught by these little identities that we fight about, right? Doesn't mean that to be without skin. We all need skin. We all need a shell to protect us from hard things in the world, hurts from the past that might happen again in the future, but also they might not, you know. The skin is mostly made up of projection from the past. They might not happen if you really take a step. They might. You can always go back in your shell. You can always go back. Okay.
belonging or kinship when we take this exquisite risk. We just feel it. We feel it. But we get so identified and caught by our familiar skin, our familiar shell. And ego self is organized around controlling, trying to get what we want and avoid what we don't want. Trying to hold on to security and comfort and push away fear or pain. And that's part of survival. Why does the mind wander all the time? People say, why does my mind wander all the time in meditation? Well, that's part of survival. The mind has to be on active alert because the mind is always checking things out because we've been hurt in the past and we don't want to be hurt in the future. So we're always checking things out, checking things out, checking things out. That goes back probably to the days we were lived in caves. I don't know. Probably. And that's natural. That's instinctual. So when people tell me their mind wanders too much, I say, well, what do you mean by too much? It's the nature of the mind to wander. On the other hand, it's also part of our evolutionary potential to keep taking a step beyond our small shell, our hard shell, in spite of all the pulls to stay inside. So here's a Zen story that I've not read before. A student and a Zen master lived across the river from each other, and they often discussed Buddhism. The student felt inspired and wrote the following poem. I bow my head to the heaven within heaven, hairline rays illuminating the universe. The eight winds cannot move me, sitting still upon the purple lotus. Ah, enlightenment poem. Wonderful enlightenment poem. So what are the eight winds? What are the eight winds that cannot move him as he sits upon the purple lotus? Happiness and suffering are the first two. Once we have happiness, fear arises that we'll lose it. We want to hold on to it. The more we try to hold on, the more we suffer. You know that. The third and the fourth, specialness and insignificance. We're afraid of our own insignificance. Who would we be if we're just nothing? If we don't have an identity? If we don't have a place in the world? We need an identity. We need a place. How hard we work to be seen as someone special. Maybe not special like this, but special some way. So here I am. I've been here for many years. And I'm kind of special, right? I've been the guiding teacher for a long time. I'm kind of special. And if I were in Japan, I'd be even more special because Roshi in Japan means aged one. That's what it means, aged one. In this country, not so much. Not so much. Wisdom and age do not correlate in our culture. Well, so that's just the deal, you know. As a human being, I fear insignificance. I fear that, what will I do? What will I do if I start to slip cognitively during my Dharma talks or in my one-to-ones with people? Well, that's part of the deal. So, specialness and insignificance, two of the winds. The fifth and the sixth wind, praise and blame. We need to be popped up constantly or we begin to have doubts about our worth. Even if we pretend we're all humble, we really need to be pumped up. Pretend to be humble all you want. I can see it. I can see it. I think others can see it too. We begin to have doubts about our worth. When we're not searching for praise, we're busy trying to cover up our mistakes so we don't get caught. The seventh and eighth wind that this enlightened person was beyond, our gain and loss. Just as we're about to congratulate ourselves on our success, oh, I had a Kensho experience. The bottom falls out. And I start getting in an argument with my wife. Well, she's arguing with me. I'm not arguing with her. Right? It's all on her, right?
gain and loss. Over and over, things are hopeful one moment and the next they're not. And in either case, we get anxious. In either case, we get anxious. So back to this student and his teacher. The student's poem. I bow my head to the heaven within heaven. Hairline rays illuminating the universe. The eight winds cannot move me. Sitting still upon the purple lotus. So he's saying, I'm no longer buffeted by the eight winds, isn't he? He's impressed with himself. Uh-oh. Then he sends a servant to hand-carry this poem to the teacher across the river. I don't know why the teachers are always across the river in these stories, but they seem to be. Fa Yin, the teacher, was across the river. And when Fa Yin reads the poem, he smiles. He writes the word fart on the manuscript, F-A-R-T, and has it returned to the student. The student gets the manuscript, opens it, sees the word fart, and he says, "How dare he insult me like this? He's not a real teacher." He gets his things together, and indignant, he rushes out of his house, and he orders a boat to ferry him to the other side of the shore so he can set this guy straight. He wants an apology. However, Fa Yin's door is closed, and on the door is a piece of paper for the student. It says, "The eight winds cannot move you. One fart blows you across the river." So how many moments are we holding on to our skin, hiding inside our shell? It hurts more to hide than to let go. Do you notice that it hurts more to hide? You can dull yourself out some, but ultimately, it's not satisfying. It's not alive. And whether you have some enlightened experience or not is irrelevant. Forget it. Forget it. Just take a step. One habit we do which keeps us locked is using others to look good and get approval. We do that. And we get small then in an interaction. And we say to ourselves, how much of the way I'm expressing myself is to get a certain response? Can you notice that when you do that? It's good to notice that without being too self-conscious about it. Just notice it. Notice how you wear your skin tight sometimes because you're afraid that if you don't, others will see something about you don't want them to see. Well, that's not bad. It's just something you can be aware of. Because we're all trying to project something positive on others. But if you can see that, you have a chance to be free of it. So now I'm going to suggest that you guys do some reflections. The first one comes from Tara Brock. So to take a moment to reflect how you wear your skin, how you might hold on to your skin or shell. So if you'd like to just take one or two cleansing breaths. And you might want to bring to mind someone who is important to you, someone you care about, and care about how they are relating to you. You might want to sense what it is you most want this person to see about you. What is it you most want this person to see about you? And also, what is it you most want them not to see about you? What is it also you most want them not to see about you? And you might bring to mind a recent time that you were together with this person. How much were you practicing your habitual way of being? Showing some parts,
covering other parts? In other words, what kind of skin were you wearing? Was it a familiar old skin where you were somewhat habitual? Was there a sense of that exquisite risk where taking a chance to be real? What might it be like with this person to take the exquisite risk? To shed an older skin, to be more real, more porous, more transparent. Let this be not just an inquiry for right this moment, but you might bring your interest and care to the next time you are together and sense, what would that really mean? What would that really look like? In my second book, I have a whole chapter on the trance of unworthiness. How we fall into a trance of unworthiness that we actually create and sustain for ourselves by practicing. This trance is not passed on to us genetically. We learn it and we practice it. Over and over again, we say things to ourselves. I'm not okay. Something's wrong with me. If so-and-so sees me about this about me, they won't like me. Over and over. That's how we create and sustain this trance. So since we create and sustain this trance ourselves, we can let it go too. We can stop and just open. Move beyond the shell. Move beyond the limiting constriction of the skin. We can pause and come into the vulnerability of right now, right here, being willing to feel with tenderness, with honesty, and just stay, and just stay. So now a second reflection. This is exploring what it means to dare to be more present. To dare to be more present. To take the exquisite risk just to be more present. You might bring to mind something that's going on in your life that's challenging, where the trance of unworthiness is playing out. Someone said to me recently she'd never experienced a trance of unworthiness. And I didn't believe her. I don't believe her. I challenge her, and the next time I see her, I'm going to challenge her again. Everybody experiences that trance. Now, some people may, because of alcohol or drugs or something, just dull themselves out so much they don't realize it. But everybody does. So, another little reflection for you to engage in if you so choose. If you so choose. Taking one or two nice cleansing breaths. And finding a place your shell or skin is squeezing you. When you bring to mind that challenging situation where the squeeze is happening, you might first see if you can observe without judging. What are the thoughts or beliefs that go with this and keep circling on and on and on to create and sustain this trance? What have you been practicing so far that reinforces hiding within your shell? What do you tell yourself about yourself or others that sustains it? What are you believing that's keeping you small? Keeping you small. And you might ask, what is it that I'm unwilling to feel? What is it, what is under the belief, under the thoughts, that in some way I might be avoiding or running from? What am I unwilling to feel? And can I dare to fully contact this? Can I take the exquisite risk of deepening intimacy right now with the place in me that is asking for attention? Can I dare to hold this with compassion? And you even might sense an intention. An intention to explore letting go of the old skin, letting go of those same thoughts and beliefs, and coming into this larger connectedness with what's really here, breathing with it, feeling it, offering kindness to it. Can you bravely be with your vulnerability? Maybe the foundation of being able to take the exquisite risk with others is engaging without a shell, without a mask. It might seem we're being real. It might seem we're being who we are. Maybe we have a lively interaction during tea time. Are we really engaging from don't know mind, from open heart mind? Or are we playing out our routine, but not really there? Playing out a routine because we're in this social situation and we feel more secure doing it. It's not bad. It's just what human beings do. If you can see it, you have a chance to take one step. One step. Dropping your certainty. Really listening inside and outside. Truly interested in what it's like for the other person. A curiosity that's paying attention to the other and a willingness to be changed by shared experience. How often are we, when we're engaging someone, willing to be changed by them as we listen to them, as we're with them, as we're open to them? If we're willing to be changed by them, they're usually going to be willing to be changed by us. So, daring to be present, to do this isn't so easy. Sometimes it's going to open and sometimes it's going to close and we're going to go back in the shell. Right. That's just life. Especially when we have strong emotions, like anger, like fear, like grief. And we'll need to close down. So be it. Take care of yourself. That's where you have a shell. But sometimes set the intention to take the exquisite risk and anchor this intention in your body. Anchor it in your body. One more reflection. Checking in for a third time, taking, if you feel like it, one or two deep breaths. Allowing the person you were considering before, that you care about, that is important to you, to come to mind. Go ahead and imagine the next time you have some time together with this person. Imagine the look on that person's face, their eyes, what they might be wearing, where you might be. And imagine having the intention to take the exquisite risk. To engage without an agenda, without rehearsing, without you know what is going on. Just open and curious and tender. Letting that person be really here in your awareness right now. You might sense that you're seeing them as if for the first time, not allowing your past knowledge or experience of them to be there. Just right now, for the first time, fresh, and look for things in them you might have missed because of familiarity. Sense the particular ways
that goodness or spirit shines through. You cannot love what you can't see freshly. It's very much about what's right here, right here. You can't love what you aren't discovering anew. You might bring to mind, if you feel like it, a second person in the same way. Letting go of the old filters and ideas of them. So you are just sensing their presence for the first time. Sensing what you might have missed. Sensing the goodness moving through. When we move through and emerge from the shell or shed skins, shed old filters, old habits, ways of impressing or having agendas, we begin to tap into beginner's mind. In beginner's mind, there are many opportunities. In the expert's mind, there are few. We just naturally tap into it. It's quite a wonderful surprise. Quite a wonderful surprise. It's not something you can consciously evoke. But when you take one step, it happens. It happens. And I've always said, and I'll say it again, till I change my story, which I may do next week, that the turtle always wins the race rather than the hare. The hare circles Bede Makaska 32 times, trying to get somewhere, trying to win, trying to win. He always looking back at the turtle. The turtle is still in the backyard. The hare is sure he's beat the turtle. But the turtle is calm inside. She just takes one step. And when she takes one step, the whole yard is with her. All of us are with her. The stars are with her. The plants are with her. The trees are with her. Poor hare, nobody's with him. He's all by himself, the poor guy. Trusting our ability to engage without knowing the outcome. And as we do that, it can ripple out to be a way of seeing and being in widening circles beyond ourselves, to each other, to the world beyond this Zendo, the big world that really needs us to be there with it, to engage with it. So I'm going to close by a poem by another turtle. This is the mock turtle in Alice in Wonderland. The mock turtle. Some of you may be on intimate terms with the mock turtle. Some of you may not. I've even met the mock turtle. But the mock turtle and the real turtle are not different. They're not different. The mock turtle invites us to take the exquisite risk. "Will you walk a little faster?" said a whiting to a snail. "There's a porpoise close behind us, and he's treading on my tail." See how eagerly the lobsters and the turtles all advance. They are waiting on the shingle. "Will you come and join the dance?" "Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Will you join the dance? Will you, won't you? Will you, won't you? Won't you join the dance? You can really have no notion how delightful it will be when they take us up and throw us with the lobsters out to sea." But the snail replied, "Too far, too far," and gave a look askance. Said he thanked the whiting kindly, but he could not join the dance. Could not, would not, could not, would not, would not join the dance. Could not, would not, would not, could not, could not join the dance. "What matters it how far we go?" the scaly friend replied. "There is another shore, you know." "Upon the other side. The further off from England, the nearer is to France." "Then turn not pale, beloved snail, but come and join the dance. Will you, won't you, will you, won't you, will you join the dance? Will you, won't you, won't you, will you, won't you join the dance?" So that's the turtle's invitation to us. Invitation. So that's my invitation to you. That's my invitation to you. So I'll be glad to take questions or comments or alternative verses from Lewis Carroll or whomever. Whomever. Yeah. John.
How ancient turtles are. Well, it's served them having a shell that they can go into.
Uh-huh.
And go out of as well.
That's right.
It seems to have served them well. They've been on the planet for
yes.
a long time.
Yes, and I would say the same for serpents. Although I don't know. I don't know from a historical point of view who came first. Yes, both amphibians, both travel on water and on land. And of course, serpents in Buddhism also travel through the sky. Other folks, anybody want to come out of their shell and say something? Or oh, maybe you just rather stay out, come out of your shell and be here. That's fine too. You don't have to speak. Yeah.
What brought you to put the Nietzsche quote on the program?
The what quote?
The Nietzsche quote.
Oh, I just liked it.
Okay. Yeah.
I just like it. Nietzsche is cool. No, I'm not a... Yeah, I just... whenever I can find Western philosophers who are saying something very similar to Buddhist philosophers, I'm interested in it. And of course, I don't want to get into a big discussion about Nietzsche, but he had this idea about radical internal change in the human being. And he talked about that as shedding a skin. And Nietzsche had some cool stuff about him, but he also had a dark side. But that's another conversation, I think. Yeah, but whenever I can find those parallels, I want to bring them up because that shows the universality of this teaching. Right? It's universal. It's not just Buddhist. I'm supposedly a Buddhist, but I don't care about that. I really don't care about that, whether I'm a Buddhist or not. Give me a break. I'm alive. I'm taking a step, and hopefully you and I are both taking steps, and we're just beating the we're beating the hair out without trying because we're just in our lives, in our moments. Yeah.
Did your teacher ever bring you down to earth or open your eyes like the teacher in the parable?
Yes. Did you guys hear his question? He said, did my teacher ever bring me down or open my eyes like the teacher in this parable? Yes. Yes. So I'll think of one example. At the Zen monastery I lived at the end of a retreat, I had a huge Kenso experience, a huge enlightenment experience in which Tim died completely, and there was just this. There was just this. And a few days later, my teacher called me into his room, and I thought, wow, he knows about it. He knows about it. He's gonna, you know, endorse me, right? Endorse me. My wife knew about it. She would endorse me. Certainly my teacher's going to endorse me if my wife does, right? And he said, well, now you have attained so-called enlightenment. And then he pointed to my shoes, which were at the door, and there was mud all over them, and they were kind of higgledy-piggledy, and they were sort of potentially staining his rug. And he said, now you need to take care of those. It brought me down, right? Pissed me off, but brought me down. Well, because yeah, I create a new shell for myself. We do that so quickly. A transcendental shell, right? Oh, wow, I'm the man. I'm the woman, right? Other people.
Thank you.